Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. To see how FreshBooks can save you time and boost your creativity, go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about us section. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. So what makes for a good, compelling brand? Especially today when the marketplace is changing and when maybe consumers are a little bit more skeptical than they used to be, you know, how do we connect with the people we intend to serve in a way that they're able to receive it, in a way that they'll look at us and see us the way that we want to be seen in the marketplace? Well, today's guest is going to help us sort through just that. His name's Blake Howard. He is the co-founder of a brand design firm called Matchstick, based in Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to talk about all things branding and also talk about his creative process. He's going to share with you a quarterly review process that I think is really interesting and I think you'll find helpful in your own leadership or even in your own everyday creative process. And speaking of Blake and his team at Matchstick, they are hosting the Atlanta Herding Tigers Workshop, which is open and available to anyone who wants to attend. However, space is limited. And it's going to be on Friday, November 8th. We're going to be spending an entire day together talking about creativity, leadership, and all the pressures of the create-on-demand world and how we can better organize our lives and our leadership and our organizations to bring our best work every day. So if you're interested in attending, just visit accidentalcreative.com/Atlanta, and you can learn more or sign up to reserve your spot. Again, spots are going to go quickly, so you probably want to get on that soon. Before we jump into the interview, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So as creative pros, we are in the business of turning clever ideas into customer value. That's what we do. The thing is, great ideas and great creative work takes time to cultivate. And running a business doesn't always provide the kind of time you need to do that great creative. And that's where our sponsor, FreshBooks, can help. FreshBooks is accounting software designed for creative pros like you and like me. It's so easy to use that you're going to save up to 16 hours a month on time-consuming admin, paperwork, etc., which means you have more time to let your creativity flourish. FreshBooks is packed with time-saving features. You can create and send branded invoices in about 30 seconds. Seriously, it is so simple, so easy. Even I can do it. It's so easy to do. And the invoices look great. They're so easy to interact with. You can set up ACH and credit card payments right on your invoices and get paid up to 2 times faster. You can snap photos of your receipts from your phone, and that'll make managing expenses 1,000,000 times faster. And when tax time rolls around, you can export tidy reports for expenses, for invoice details, and sales tax to make working with your accountant a breeze. No more shuffling through those boxes of receipts at the end of the year to organize them. So allocate more time to creating and let FreshBooks do the boring accounting and bookkeeping work. Right now, we're offering listeners of the Axon Creative Podcast a free 30-day trial of FreshBooks. No credit card required. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about us section. That's freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about us section. We thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have on the show today Blake Howard. Blake is somebody I've known for a really long time. We've interacted off and on as part of, you know, the Accidental Creative community. I've been following what he does in Atlanta with Creative Mornings, which is just a thriving, amazing Creative Mornings community there in Atlanta. And Blake is the co-founder of a creative agency in Atlanta called Matchstick, without the K. He's Matchstick with a C. And super excited to have him on the show today. Blake, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So you have your finger in a lot of pies, and you have a lot going on. I would just love if we just start by you describing for us the kind of work that you and Matchstick does. Like, what kind of work do you do there?
Yeah. There's several jobs that I think about. My primary job is with Matchstick, and we're a branding firm. So we help organizations define who they are and how they best can express that out to the world. So a lot of brand strategy, a lot of naming, a lot of messaging and visual design, kind of visual identity system. So that's kind of the core of what I do. We're a smaller agency. There's about 20 of us, and we're in Atlanta, and we focus on a lot of different types of organizations, a lot of nonprofit work, a lot of technology, a lot of real estate clients. So that's my main job. And then in addition to that, like you mentioned, I organize the Atlanta chapter of Creative Mornings, which I'm a little biased, but I think it is the best chapter. They're all great chapters.
But I think New York biased. Might argue, seeing as how they're the original chapter, but they might argue with you on it.
Oh, you know, they're the old school, we're the new school. I'm just kidding. They're great. I love them. And that's a monthly breakfast lecture series for creative types. That's a little bit like a TED Talk each month, but it's completely free and it's local and we have amazing breakfast and coffee and it's a chance to just connect with the creative community in and around Atlanta. And then I also have a podcast called The Creative Rising that I host, which is learning from other creative professionals and their stories and how they kind of overcame adversity in that journey of theirs.
Yeah. And I will say your podcast is fantastic. And I've been privileged to be a guest on the show and really enjoyed that conversation. But I love the way that you approach topics in a very practical way. I think a lot of times people really only hover at kind of the 50,000 foot level when they're talking about concepts. And I love how you really dive into the details. It really is super useful to listeners. So thank you for being one of those shows. That's really great.
I do think that's important. And a lot of the conversations I've had with younger designers or younger creatives or maybe mid-level sort of developing creatives, there tends to be a lot of questions around practical things. How do I handle feedback? How do I become a better presenter? How do I negotiate my salary? How do I, you know, all those very practical things that you don't learn in a art school necessarily.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because, again, I've been following you and your career and your team for a really long time. And you seem to have built a very unique culture at Matchstick. I remember, now I'm probably going to bring something up that you may not want me to bring up, and I'm going to bring it up anyway. I remember like several years ago, you guys were going to a client event and you wore like matching Royal Tenenbaums sweatsuits or something like that. Is that true?
That is true. We had, now this is very... This is dated. This is about 12 years ago, Todd.
Oh, of course. So that shows how long I've been watching what you guys are doing, right?
We were, you know, we're 20 somethings with a creative agency, and what doesn't sound fun about traveling together in kind of like your traditional Adidas jumpsuit? It was red with white stripes down the side and it had Matchstick on the back, and we just thought it'd be kind of fun. And it was, we were doing a lot of work in the music space, and there was a client of ours that did themed music cruises, and we got to go on those cruises, which was great. So we thought, hey, let's have these uniforms and travel. And what was funny is at first it was hilarious and we loved it. But then after like the third hour wearing that jumpsuit and getting the 10th question of like, hey, are you guys a sports team? Are you a boy band? Like what are you? Cause there were five of us that were traveling, and eventually I regretted it, thinking like, okay, next time I might just wear normal travel clothes.
Yeah, absolutely. We are a professional curling team. That's what we are. Yeah, we're a professional.
The lead story was a competitive ping pong.
Oh, that's good.
That seemed to fit sort of our
and it's believable.
No one was really like a basketball player or, you know, a pro wrestler or anything like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. All right. So You guys are a branding firm, and I'm curious to hear your perspective on, after all these years of doing this, what do you think it is that makes a really compelling brand?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we kind of have a model that we help clients define for themselves, and essentially we just say a brand is a reputation. Brand is a modern word for a classic principle of what do people say about your organization when you're not in the room. And we help our clients define what they want that reputation to be. Ideally, what would people say when you're not in the room? And there's kind of four parts to that. And one is, you know, what do you represent beyond making a profit? More than kind of what you do, it's the classic, well, why do you do it? What's your conviction and your heartbeat and your purpose? And what's the rally cry of the organization? That's fundamental to the story and to the reputation that you might have. And secondly, you have to really define your audience and how do you add value for them? And beyond functional value or transactional, you have to add emotional value. And so we like to do a deep dive into sort of a psychographic of an audience persona and to understand what do they need, what do they want, what's their world like, what do they fear, And then how does this organization kind of help add value to that person? And then, of course, we have to think about differentiation, which is, to me, a lot of the origins of branding. You know, like the word itself even comes from farmers who didn't have barbed wire fencing yet needed to discern their livestock from their neighbor's livestock. So they had to physically brand them to recognize whose property was whose. And so differentiation is at the core of branding. And so we help our clients position around a certain, you know, angle or perspective or personality or persona almost. And then the last thing we do, which to me is the most important, is help folks define how do they live that out? Because branding is much more than vanity. Branding's more than just choosing the right colors or looking a certain way. Today, consumers just expect a certain level of delivery on promises. And so we kind of go through that as well. And once you define all those things, then you can make fun and informed decisions around a logo or a color palette or name or key message. But to me, a brand really has to go through the hard work of defining those four key areas before it could stand on something that is substantial and be known for something that is meaningful in the marketplace.
So I want to get to that question of what you stand for beyond just the thing that you're putting into the world, you know, the product or the service or whatever it is. But I would love to get your perspective on how the world of brand development and, you know, the work that you do has really changed over the last, you know, number of years that you've been doing this, because you've been doing it for a very long time. You know, what are some changes that you've seen over the last, you know, bit of time that you've been doing this work?
Yeah. I was just thinking about this the other day, and from maybe a couple different perspectives. One, from our firm's perspective, when we first started to focus in branding, which was really right about the time the recession hit, which if you're ever going to specialize and focus during a recession, it's probably not the right time to do it. Right, but
yes.
Luckily we made it through and it was okay. But at that point, it was more about convincing people that brand was important and they should invest in it. So it was educational, like our messaging was educational, and I would have conversation after conversation of convincing entrepreneurs or sort of small to mid-sized businesses why they should invest in brand, that it really is important. And now, several years later, it's less about that. It seems like the main thought is less about brand is valuable, and it's more about how can you uniquely reach your audience and how can you have a brand that's authentic, that's true, that's believable. So there has been this macro trend around, you know, I just don't believe or trust products that are out there. You know, like when I go to buy toothpaste and the aisle is filled with different features and there's, you know, flavor crystals and there's whitening and then there's cavity protection, I don't really believe any of that as a consumer, just sort of anecdotally. I don't really believe it. I think it's all basically the same and it's all kind of a scam. And I think that insight represents a larger macro trend that consumers generally have. And so it's less about, you know, just this core belief that you should invest in brand. And it's more now about how do I have a very authentic and true brand that people believe in and they're drawn to and is actually meaningful in the market. So the shift has been pretty distinct from my perspective.
Well, and okay, so that gets to the question I wanted to ask you. Because I feel like, you know, this word, you said skepticism, and I would almost say cynicism toward brands in some ways. I think that our posture coming into any kind of an environment, you know, a store or, you know, whatever, any experience where we interact with a brand, our initial posture, it feels like, is more one of cynicism than it used to be, right? And we talk a lot about empathy toward the consumer. And we tell brands, you know, you have to exhibit empathy. You have to understand their world, live inside their world, be able to communicate, you know, through a lens that connects with them. But I feel like what we ignore is the fact that there's very little empathy toward brands these days, right? And very little empathy toward people who are trying to put something into the world. I feel like as consumers, and I don't know if this is social media, I don't know what it is, but it feels like the consumer's initial posture often is one of cynicism going into the interaction.
Yeah, sure.
Do you feel that?
Prove
or
it
no?
To me. Yeah, totally. It's less... I'm gonna have a default of, I've been reading into the new Malcolm Gladwell book, and he talks about the default of truth, how as a culture we generally believe people by face value, but I feel like from a buying perspective, we generally don't. Maybe the younger generation generally doesn't believe, and so it's more of a, I'll believe it when you prove it to me. And some of the example, one of my favorite examples that I use, and I don't know if listeners everywhere have this experience, but Comcast is a big cable provider, telecommunications company in the Southeast where we are in Atlanta. And they have a notoriously bad reputation. People hate Comcast. I mean, it is just the worst. Your bill's wrong. They're late to repair. You're on hold forever. They charge you way too much. And then you see a commercial with this cool, innovative position around the future of awesome. And you just see it as a consumer and you're like, oh, you're not the future of awesome. I don't believe that, you know? And so they're kind of out kicking their coverage and they're over promising with their slick advertising campaign. And as consumers, we just don't buy it. And you almost want them to like level down their message a little bit of like, we're pretty good cable, or like be a little bit more reasonable.
Answering your customer service phone calls. You know?
We will likely get to your call within 15 minutes.
Right.
Something that just feels a little bit more achievable, I think makes sense because we just go into it with high skepticism as consumers.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because that's something I talk about with leaders a lot is that most leaders aren't blowing it in the big ways. They're not lying to their team. You know, they're casting vision and they believe it. The problem is that they're messing up in the small ways, the little things that they do, the missed meetings, the little promises they make that they can't quite keep, but it doesn't seem like a big deal because it's not really a big deal, but it blows trust in the big ways. And I think, you know, a lot of brands, I think often they get the big things right, but they're not getting the little things right. The little things that blow trust. I think people sniff that out pretty quickly. And they also fail to realize like brands don't exist in isolation. They exist in an ecosystem, you know? And so you can easily absorb some of the stink from another brand that's in that ecosystem without even knowing it. Like all cable companies suck, right? Like that's just something that I've heard people say, well, maybe, but maybe not, but it's just sort of our default position, maybe because of experiences we've had.
Yeah. I love that. And I think also a little bit of a shift in the conversation, but creatives have a unique ability to understand this concept of what we're talking about, of really needing to deliver and designing a better experience and thinking about the customer first and having empathy. And it's a unique opportunity for creatives to add value in the business sector with that type of thinking. Yes. Because in my experience, CEOs or C-suite executives, they understand the importance of customer satisfaction and the importance of keeping customers engaged with the organization. They might not understand the value of a logo or a look and feel or an advertising campaign or good copywriting, but they understand client happiness. And so it seems like an opportunity for creatives to step into that and to lead that, and that companies would be hungry for and they would see value with that type of work.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And not only are they able to do it, but should have a voice in the conversation because they are able to maybe communicate and connect in ways that other leaders with different backgrounds may or may not be able to do, right? Because they're used to looking for those non-intuitive leaps. How do you, Blake, how do you organize your life so that you're able to see some of these more subtle, you know, more nuanced opportunities or patterns that maybe other people overlook?
Well, one thing that I've started to do over the last few years that's been so helpful is every quarter I take a full day off and I call them my quarterly planning days. And I don't allow any client work. I don't allow any actual work. I'm not at home. I don't do chores. I don't watch TV. I go to an offsite location, usually a coffee shop, or I've even gone outside of the city before just to kind of get away. And I kind of reflect about the previous 3 months and some of the goals that I've set. I try to read a book or have some sort of inspirational, thought-provoking content that I sort of spend time going through. And then I spend time planning and thinking about what do I want to do over the next couple of months. And at first it was more tactical, like I want to set some goals and I want to just think more about my life, career, and my family and, you know, relationships. But what it's turned into is kind of this space to just stop and think and reflect a little bit. And even that rhythm is what sort of was the genesis for the idea for the podcast. And so I think there's so much value in stopping and calling a timeout and just reflecting on who you are, what you want to achieve, where you're going. And to me, that space is what creates the mindset and the ability to make observations over small things like that. So whether it's macro trends related to your profession, or it's an insight about, you know, the type of parent or partner you are, just making time to get away is so valuable. But our culture and the demands, the whirlwind, tell us otherwise. And so it's just about saying, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to say no to everything else. I'm going to take this time to step back and think and reflect. And to me, that's been foundational in forming some sort of insight or point of view around the work that I do and the life that I want to lead also.
So walk us through what that quarterly planning day looks like. I mean, do you go in with a set of problems you want to think about? Do you journal? Do you just spend time walking around? Like what does that look like when you go away for that?
Yeah. Hours? I like frameworks. And so I actually thought about a little bit of a framework with it, and it's simple, and it's probably, and I can share specifically what I do, but it's about reflection first. And I try to, and I journal a lot. So I look back through my journal and I reflect typically in the last 3 months, and I look for themes and patterns like, wow, I've really been stressed about this, or this topic or theme seems to come up quite a bit. So I kind of just reflect, and then I think about being inspired. And so that's where I read a book, or maybe I have a couple articles online that I've sort of flagged over the last few months that I'll try to spend some time reading and just maybe shifting my perspective or getting some sort of insight from. And then thirdly is when I sort of plan and I start to think about goals. And I do think about those goals as it relates to kind of different groups or areas of my life. So I think about goals as it relates to work, maybe as it relates to some of my clients, as it relates to my wife and our marriage, and as it relates to each of my kids and then my extended family. And you know, I kind of break it out through different stakeholder groups, essentially, and I kind of set goals around that or analyze how I've done in those areas and what I want to do to improve. But it really is about those three kind of steps of reflection, inspiration, and then planning. And as I've done it more and more, I've even spent some of the days doing. Like I'm pretty good at planning and setting goals. I'm not always great at doing, you know, like actually doing the goals or like completing the goals that I set out. And so yeah. I've even started to kind of allocate the second half of the day to like, I'm just going to do some things. I'm going to start writing a couple ideas for an article, or I'm going to start writing a few potential intros for the podcast, or I'm going to start working on this new presentation that I had an idea for. So that's a bit of the flow.
So What does the output of that time look like? So you spend that time writing, then you're organizing your thoughts, you're journaling, you're actually maybe even doing some of the work, but then you come back from that, right? And I by the way, I do a very similar rhythm. I do these quarterly checkpoints that I wrote about in the Accidental Creative. And you know, when I come back in, there's always the going away is great and the thoughts are great, but then there's always the reentry. So what does that look like for you when you come back from that quarterly planning session?
Yeah. The output is usually a list of goals or things that I would like to complete over the next 3 months. And I have experimented with the best way to keep that list front and center, whether it's in an app that I use or a Google Doc or just a simple document. And that's always a bit of a trick, but I use an app called To-Do right now that I have them kind of front and center. And I use that app to manage a lot of my daily tasks. And so there's a section that's more evergreen that's always appears that I put those in there so I can daily see them. That's been helpful. And, you know, the transition back into the whirlwind is always difficult, and it always comes down to what are you going to prioritize and really value, and how do you say no to certain opportunities. And it's rare that we're starved of opportunities. It's more so that we say yes to every opportunity. And so if I can have a good sense of what I want my priorities to be over the next 3 months, then I can actually say yes or no more effectively. And that's been helpful. But it often is, you know, I feel like I have some really great goals and then I get back into the grind and a week goes by or 2 weeks or 3 weeks go by and I haven't even made anything happen with those goals. And that's where if I keep them front and center, I'm more likely to think about them and make time. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's been helpful as well is to actually go into my Google Calendar and put blocks of time in my calendar to work on those projects.
Because yeah, so
if it's in my calendar, I'll do it. If it's not, I probably won't. I kind of live and die by my calendar.
Yeah. And I do the same thing on a weekly basis, you know, like I'll go in and look at my calendar and I'll say, okay, I've got these big priorities. When is it going to get done this week? You know, if I don't block off time to create content, you know, to do podcasts and we have, you know, we have sponsors that are, you know, that are like, you know, so we have to do podcasts every week,
right.
But you know, with my traveling, like I was in DC all day yesterday, I had a 1 day trip to DC. Well, it's not going to happen on that day. And so if I don't sit down and I don't block out time for these important things. And by the way, not just the stuff that has to get done, but the things that should get done, but aren't necessarily a huge priority right now because they're not going to be, they're not going to bear results now. Maybe they're going to bear results in 6 months. Those are the kinds of things where you really have to sit down and, like you said, strategically use your calendar and say, okay, on Thursday afternoon from 1 to 3, I'm going to spend a lot of time concepting this project that may not even see the light of day for 6 months, but it needs to be done now.
Yeah, it's huge. And there's sort of these different stages that I think creatives go through in their development. When you're a little bit earlier on or younger in your career, you typically have a project manager or someone who's helping you manage your time and helping you with that process of everything that you're juggling. But as you progress and maybe even the higher up you get in the organization, you have no one telling you what your priorities should be, and you have to learn how to set them, and you have to learn how to manage them, and you have to think, where do I add the most value? And I'm going to say no and let go or delete, delegate, or delay these other things. And I really feel like that is the crux of development as a creative, like really learning, where do I add value? And do I need to be in this client meeting? Do I need to do that client presentation? Do I need to do that segment of work? Is there anyone else that can do it? And still developing people that can do those things with high quality and you know, serve people really well, but being able to step out of some of those things and step into where you add the most value is really difficult, but also maybe the most important factor of growing your career and developing well.
It is. Well, and it's an act of faith too, because there are things you can do that are going to bear results right now. And there are things you can do that are going to be seeds that you're planting. They're going to bear results in 4 months. And that's always an act of faith, right? Because you're doing work. It's like doing spec work. When you're in a young agency and you're spending a lot of time doing spec work for a client, like there's no guarantee it's going to pay off, but it's you're investing in your future, right? You're investing in potential relationships and you're also sharpening your skills and doing all these kinds of things. And I think, you know, really in many ways, like that is really the act of courage that's necessary, is we have to be willing to block off time to do things that may not have an immediate result on the bottom line, but that may pay off long term for us in terms of our abilities or in terms of our relationships or in terms of just the quality of work that we're capable of doing.
Yeah, I love it. It's so good.
So I just, by way of sort of rounding out our conversation here, I'm just really curious, you've obviously been around for a while and you've seen a lot of trends and you've hired a lot of people and you've probably seen some people succeed and some people maybe not succeed, in this profession. I'm curious if you were going to give advice to a young person who's coming into the creative services industry right now, what would be your advice to them?
I think there is an extended set of skills beyond your craft that are equally as important as your ability to do good work. And that really is more of a soft skill set around developing relationships and addressing conflict directly, the ability to not gossip or want to, you know, go and have hearsay conversations around sort of the negative interactions that can happen at an agency or in-house. I mean, the creative professional field I think is exceptionally difficult because we love the work that we do, and we have our personal identity impressed into the work that we're working on. And sometimes it can be rejected and it can be torn apart and people can be really difficult and hard, whether that's a client or a boss. And so all these negative emotions come out in a unique way that are different than other professions, I think. And so the temptation is to go and gossip or to be overly negative or go and find a colleague and commiserate together. Mm-hmm. But the ability to have an emotional development where you think, I'm not going to do those things. I'm going to invest in healthier relationships and I'm going to invest in more of the soft skills required to be a professional in this. So when I do have a conflict, I'm going to know how to handle it well. I'm going to go directly to the person and I'm going to say, hey, the other day when this happened, I started to tell myself this story and it felt like I wasn't believing the best in you. And I don't want that, but that's just how I feel. And I felt like it was important to bring that to your attention. You know, like that requires a ton of courage to handle that. And as a young person, that's not always an instinct that you naturally have. And you have to really work on that skill and that development. So I think the more creative professionals can develop those soft skills of handling conflict directly, building good relationships, investing in people, serving your coworkers and your clients and your bosses, it can pay a huge, huge return on those activities. But they're not always necessarily front and center because you love design or you love copywriting. And so that's what you focus your time on. But those soft skills are just as important in doing effective work.
Yeah, could not agree more. And I think that's the thing that we don't teach. You know, we teach the hard skills, right. We don't teach the soft skills. And the soft skills, unfortunately, yeah, can take years and years to learn. And to that point, we are going to be having a Herding Tigers workshop in Atlanta for leaders on November 8th, as we're recording this right now, which is just I think 3 or 4 weeks away. And we're going to be talking about some of those soft skills. It's going to be at Matchstick, and Blake and his team have graciously agreed to host the workshop. And really, it is about not just, I mean, most leaders have the hard skills down. I mean, how do you do great creative? But sometimes we're not really great at the soft skills as leaders, the things that we need to know to be able to mobilize a team, to be able to organize a team, to protect their time and attention and all those kinds of things. So that's what we're going to be talking about at the Herding Tigers workshop. So Blake, thanks for hosting that workshop.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think it's such an important topic. And the conversation that you and I had on the Creative Rising about shifting from maker to manager is something that's near and dear to my heart. It's a transition that I've had to make, and it's been difficult. Yeah. And I think the points that you have and the content you have is just really great and practical and helpful. And so I'm excited to host and to learn from you.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm excited to be there. Blake, if people want to come find out more about you and about Matchstick, where can they go?
Matchstick.com, and that's with no K on the end, is the best place to just find out more about our agency and our work. And then I'm also on Instagram, just at Blake Howard.
That's amazing. Well, Blake, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan, and this has been a lot of fun.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.